Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 24, Text 52. Tvam Sarva Lokasya Surit Priyeshvaro Hi Atma Gurur Janam Abhishta Siddhi Tatapi Loko Na Bhavantam Andadir Janati Santam Riddhi Barakama Tvam Sarvalokasya Surit Priyeshvaro Yatma Guru Janam Abhishta Siddhi Tatapi Loko Na Bhavantam Andadir Janati Shantam Riddhi Barakama Tvam Sarvalokasya Surit Priyeshvaro Yatma Guru Janam Abhishta Siddhi Tatapi Loko Na Bhavantam Andadir Janati Santam Riddhi Barakama Tvam Sarvalokasya Surit Priyeshvaro Yatma Guru Gyanam Abhishta Siddhi Tatapi Loko Na Bhavantam Andadir Janati Shantam Riddhi Barakama Vaishnavis. You, my dear Lord, Sarvalokasya, of all planets and their inhabitants, Surit, the most well-wishing friend, Priya, the most dear, Ishvara, the supreme controller, He also, Atma, the supreme soul, Guru, the supreme teacher, Jnanam, the supreme knowledge, Abhishtasiddhi, the fulfillment of all desires, Tathapi, still, Loka, persons, Na, not, Bhavantam, unto you, Andadi, because of blind intelligence, Janati, can know, Shantam, situated, Riddhi, in his heart, Badakama, because of being bewildered by material lusty desires. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, you are the supreme well-wishing friend of everyone, the dearmost friend, the controller, the supersoul, the supreme instructor, and the giver of supreme knowledge and the fulfillment of all desires. But although you are within the heart, the foolish, because of lusty desires in the heart, cannot understand you. Purport. Herein, the reason for foolishness is described. Because the conditioned soul in this material world is full of materialistic, lusty desires, he cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although the Lord is situated in everyone's heart. Ishvara sarvabhutanam hriday she arjuna tishtati. It is because of this foolishness that one cannot take instructions from the Lord, although the Lord is ready to instruct everyone, both externally and internally. The Lord says, Dadami buddhiyogam tam, yenamam upiyantite. In other words, the Lord can give instructions on devotional service by which one can return home back to Godhead. Unfortunately, however, people do not take this devotional service. The Lord, being situated in everyone's heart, can give one complete instructions on going back to Godhead. But because of lusty desires, one engages himself in materialistic activities and does not render service to the Lord. Therefore, one is bereft of the value of the Lord's instructions. By mental speculation, one can understand that one is not the body but a spirit soul. But unless one engages in devotional service, the real purpose of life is never fulfilled. The real purpose of life is going back home, back to Godhead, and live with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Play with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, dance with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and eat with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are different items of ananda, spiritual happiness, in spiritual variegatedness. Even though one may come to the platform of Brahma-Bhuta and understand his spiritual identity by speculative knowledge, one cannot enjoy spiritual life without understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is indicated here by the word Abhishta-Siddhi. One can fulfill the ultimate goal of life only by engaging in devotional service to the Lord. Then the Lord will give one proper instructions on how to go back home, back to Godhead. Om Aganatam Nandasha Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yenatasma Shri Gudavena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadama and Padati Swapadantikam. So who are the foolish people? Who are the foolish? It's being referred to here in the translation of the purport. What can you say about the foolish? Who are they? Materialistically minded people. Can somebody say more? That's certainly correct. Say it again. What is that? Translate for the... What would you say? What I'm fishing for here, what I'm looking for is, I want the primary characteristic of foolish. What's the primary characteristic of being foolish? So far, everything that's said has been correct. What? That's correct too. These are all correct answers. I'm hoping I have the most correct answer. What the primary characteristic of being foolish? He's warmer. He's the warmest. Can anybody? That's also correct. That's also very warm. Let's see if somebody can just hit it right on the head there. What? That's also correct. Yeah, also correct. That's also correct. What was yours again? What did you say? Yeah. What I'm looking for, the primary characteristic of being foolish is... I was thinking the primary characteristic of foolishness, of being foolish, is unwilling to engage in devotional service to the Lord. When you're unwilling to engage in devotional service to the Lord, all those other things that were described here, all those other answers, correct answers which were given, are byproducts of that. The initial foolishness, the primary characteristic of foolishness, and the initial foolishness is being unwilling to engage in devotional service to the Lord. And then everything else follows. Then all the lusty desires follow, and, the taking the body as the self follows, and everything. I just remember, in this eighth canto, it just so happens, is a purport where Prabhupada basically says that. I'll read it to you. Just a couple sentences. It says here, attachment, greed, and lust are three formidable forces that prevent one from concentrating upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here it comes. These forces act because the Supreme Lord does not like to be realized by non-devotees and atheists. See? So we can't put the cart before the horse. You've got to put the horses before the cart. The first thing is, you're a non-devotee. If you're a non-devotee and an atheist, then these forces of attachment, greed, and lust are going to act. And when you decide, when a living entity decides to be a devotee, then they are removed. Prabhupada goes on to say, however, when one surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord, these impediments are withdrawn, and one can realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. See? So the primary characteristic of being foolish is that you're unwilling to engage in devotional service to the Lord. And then these other things will follow. So that's the big mistake. So the big correct thing to do is be willing. Be willing to engage in devotional service to the Lord. If we're willing to engage in devotional service to the Lord, despite the fact that we are lusty, have material desires, material lusty desires as being described here in this verse, or other problems, those things can be taken care of. Those things are not insurmountable obstacles, provided that we're willing to engage in devotional service to the Lord. There's a very nice passage in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I can't remember exactly where it is, but I found this. It's transcribed or also given in a purport in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada quotes that little passage. Anyway, I'll read it. And this is in relation to this point of how as long as we're willing to be engaged in devotional service to the Lord, then the problem of material desires will be taken care of. And here's how it works. So it goes here. A devotee may desire something other than service to the lotus feet of the Lord. But if he engages in Lord Krishna's service, Krishna gives him shelter at his lotus feet, even though he does not aspire for it. The Lord says, he is engaged in my service, but he wants the benefits of material sense gratification. Such a devotee is like a person who asks for poison instead of nectar. That is his foolishness. But I am experienced. Why should I give such a foolish person the dirty things of material enjoyment? It would be better for me to give him shelter at my lotus feet. I shall cause him to forget all material desires. That was Krishna, what he's thinking. Then goes on. If one engages in the service of the Lord for sense gratification, the result is that he ultimately gets a taste for serving the lotus feet of the Lord. He then gives up all material desires and wants to become an eternal servant of the Lord. Okay? So the point is that, you know, somebody might be thinking, well, I can't engage in devotional service. I'm too, you know, disturbed by material desires. Right? I can't do it. I got away. I got to get rid of some material desires and first, and then I'll... No. Don't think like that. You know, whatever situation, whatever kind of condition you're in, immediately try to be engaged in devotional service. Let Krishna take care of it. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. Right? Don't cut your own throat. Let Krishna take care of it. Let Krishna decide whether you're not qualified to be engaged in his devotional service. Right? If you're not, he'll let you know. Don't worry. But in the meantime, you go for it. Everybody should go for it. Try to be engaged in devotional service and let Krishna do what he's saying here. He'll take care of the material desires. You know, gradually, Krishna will handle you in such a way, he'll manage your life in such a way that you will, you know, gradually become more attached to just pure devotional, you know, gravitate towards pure devotional service and become free from those things. Right? And there's the scriptures are replete with examples of great devotees who, that was their experience. I mean, probably the most, first and foremost, one of the most well-known examples would be Dhruva Maharaj. Right? Dhruva Maharaj, you know, he had big material desire. He wanted revenge, basically. Dhruva Maharaj wanted revenge. He wanted a kingdom that was greater than his father's, greater than his grandfather's, greater than his great-grandfather's, right? Swayambhuva Manu, father was Uttanapada, son of Swayambhuva Manu, son of, Lord Brahma was his great-grandfather. So he wanted a kingdom even greater than that. And he was worshipping, you know, he went to the forest on the instruction of his mother to worship the Supreme Lord for that purpose. And so, you know, we all know the story. He he performed his devotional service according to the instruction of Narada Muni, and Krishna eventually came, and Lord Vishnu came, and he was awarded what he wanted, but he was also, you know, got Krishna. Anyway, there's a nice, but in a purport there, Prabhupada brings up this point about who's qualified to engage in devotional service. And, you know, is a person who has material desires qualified to engage in devotional service? You know, once again, somebody might think they're not, but here this point is, in one purport, Prabhupada brings that up. He says, the question raised here is whether or not a person afflicted... Actually, Dhruva Maharaj was thinking like that. Dhruva Maharaj himself was thinking that, you know, because he rejected... Narada Muni gave him a certain set of instructions to start off with, and he said, actually, I'm not... I can't do it. I can't... I know your instructions are good, but they don't... I can't wrap my mind around them. They're just too... I have this desire, and I can't... You know, so it was in the purport to that verse where, you know, that particular part of the story where this Prabhupada raises this question when Dhruva Maharaj was rejecting that first set of instructions he received from Narada Muni. So Prabhupada says here, the question raised here is whether or not a person afflicted by material desires is fit to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The answer is that everyone is fit to worship him. Even if one has many material desires to fulfill, he should take to Krishna consciousness and worship the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is so merciful that he fulfills everyone's desires. Through this narration, it will become clear that no one is barred from worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if one has many material desires. So, once again, I'm not reading this, I'm trying to encourage everybody to have material desires, but the idea is that at least, you know, we should have this clear in our mind that, you know, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udardi tivrena bhakti yogana yajeta padushampada. That wherever you're at, you know, whether you want all fulfillment of all material desires, you want liberation, whatever, you know, wherever position we're in, the correct thing to do is try to surrender to Krishna. And everything else, you know, it'll all fall in place. By Krishna's mercy, it'll all fall in place. And it's a very nice... Prabhupada tells a very nice humorous story that illustrates this point in a lecture he once gave. I'll read it. Prabhupada says, there is about the one point being that you just somehow or another, just be, you know, try to surrender to Krishna. Or somehow or another, at least try to be in contact with Krishna. You know, try to be in contact with Krishna somehow or another, and the ultimate benefit will be there. So in this regard, Prabhupada tells this nice story. He says, one professional reciter was reciting about Bhagavat, and he was describing that Krishna, being very highly decorated with all jewels, is sent for tending the cows in the forest. So there was a thief in that meeting. So he thought, why not then go to Vrindavan and plunder this boy? He is in the forest with so many valuable jewels. I can go there and catch the child and take all the jewels. So Prabhupada goes, that was his intention. So he was serious that I must find that boy. Then in one night I shall become a millionaire. So much jewels. So he went there. His qualification was that I must see Krishna. I must see Krishna. That anxiety, that eagerness made it possible that in Vrindavan he saw Krishna. He saw Krishna the same way as he was informed by the Bhagavad Gita. Then he said to Krishna, oh, you are a so nice boy, Krishna. So he began to flatter him, he's thinking that by flattering I shall take all his jewels. So then eventually he proposed his real business. So may I take some of these ornaments? You are so rich. And Krishna, he goes, no, my mother will be angry. I cannot. Prabhupada goes, so, you know, Krishna, behaving like a child, responded like that. So so the thief, he became more and more eager for Krishna. And then he goes, by Krishna's association, he had already become purified. Then at last, Krishna said, all right, you can take. But by then, he said, Prabhupada says, he'd become a devotee. By Krishna's association. So Prabhupada's conclusion to this whole humorous and very instructive anecdote is that some way or other you should come in contact with Krishna. Oh, he uses that word too. Some way or another you should come in contact with Krishna. Some way or other. Then we'll be purified. So that's the point. And and the reason behind this is that Krishna's very magnanimous. You know, he's got a big heart. He's very magnanimous, and he's desiring. He wants all the living entities to come back to God. He wants to help us progress in our devotional service, and that's why he's extending himself like that. I'll read just an excerpt from another lecture Prabhupada gave. A great example of this is when these 16,100 princesses were kidnapped by Bulbasaur, right? And they were being held captive. And finally, they got a message to Krishna that, please come and rescue us. This is our situation. We're captive by this Bulbasaur. So Krishna came, and he killed Bulbasaur, and he, rescued the princesses, and he released them. So then, at that point, there was like an interesting exchange happened. So Prabhupada says, I'll read that section here. So Krishna came to rescue them, and Bulbasaur was killed, and the girls were made free. But after freedom, they were still standing there. So Krishna asked them, now you can go go home to your father. They said that we are kidnapped and we cannot be married. In India, still that rule is there. If one young girl, goes out of home for one day or 2 days, nobody will marry her. Nobody will marry her. She's considered spoiled. This is still the Indian system. So they were kidnapped for so many days and so many years. So they appealed to Krishna that we'll not be accepted either by our father, neither anybody will agree to marry. Then Krishna understood, their position is very precarious. Although they are released, they cannot go anywhere. Then Krishna, he's so kind, Bhaktavatsal, he inquired, okay, what do you want? What do you want? They said, you accept us. Otherwise, we have no other means. Krishna immediately, yes, come on. You see? So Krishna's very magnanimous. Yes, come on. This is Krishna. And not that his 16,000 wives were concentrated in one camp. He immediately constructed 16,000 palaces. because he has accepted as wife, she must be maintained as wife, as his queen. Not that because they have no other means, they have come to my shelter, I can keep them anyway. No, most respectfully, as queen, as Krishna's queen. And it goes on. So, once again, the point is Krishna is very magnanimous. You know, this is how he relates to his devotees. So if anybody tries to be a devotee of Krishna, then eventually, you know, Krishna's going to reciprocate. They're going to get Krishna's mercy. It might take some time. We have to be, you know, like Amala Bhakta just finished giving this course about a week or two ago in the Nectar of Instruction. And it's the second verse. It goes, he talks about the different qualities you have to be successful in devotional service. Utsahan nishchayat daryat tat tat karma pavartanat. How's it go? Sango tyaga tisovrte. Yes, sabdir bhakti pranashyati. So you have to have those qualities. You have to be enthusiastic. You have to be determined. You have to be patient like that in order to be successful, because that's just the way it works. You know, it's we shouldn't expect that. Krishna will reciprocate, but we can't expect it's going to be handed over to us on a silver platter. You know, actually, interestingly enough, that point also comes up in that pastime by Dhruva Maharaj. In one purport, Prabhupada, he brings up the point that, why was it that, Narada Muni is referred, it's a section which says Narada Muni is referred to as Bhagavan Narada. Bhagavan Narada. So Prabhupada in this purport brings up the question. He says, well, why was it that, Narada Muni didn't just give Dhruva Maharaj the benediction he desired right there on the spot? You know, he's referred to as Bhagavan Narada. Prabhupada was indicating that he was powerful enough. He could have. You know, it wasn't like he was incapable of doing that. He could have. But the answer to the question is here. I'll read this one paragraph. Prabhupada says, Narada Muni is referred to as Bhagavan because he can bless any person just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead can. He was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj, and he could have at once personally given whatever he wanted. But that is not the duty of the spiritual master. See, that's it right there. It's not the duty of the spiritual master to kind of just hand it over to us on a silver platter like that. His duty is to engage the disciple in proper devotional service as prescribed in the Shastras. Krishna was similarly present before, just a few days ago I was hearing a lecture or a conversation where Prabhupada was, they were talking about initiations. So Prabhupada was asking some senior devotee about the candidates, and they said, they were saying, yeah, Prabhupada, they've been waiting 6 months, and Prabhupada said, yes, that is correct, they have to. He says, otherwise they will take it cheaply. You see? So Prabhupada had his logic behind it, in other words. If the person, easy come, easy go, is an expression, in English, easy come, easy go. So if you get something too easily, then you don't value it. It's the same reason, logic, why Prabhupada wanted us to get people to give donations for the books. You know, he expressed that on different occasions that, if they give something for it, then they value it more. I sacrificed $5 or $10 of my hard-earned money to purchase this book. Well, what does it say anyway? Let me read it. You see? So it's that same idea. So anyway, it goes on to say, it's the duty of the spiritual master to engage the disciple in proper devotional service as prescribed in the Shastras. Krishna was similarly present before Arjuna, and even though he could have given all facilities for victory over the opposing party without a fight, he did not do so. Instead, he asked Arjuna to fight. In the same way, Narada asked Dhruva Maharaj to undergo devotional discipline in order to achieve the desired result. So that's the deal, so to speak. We have to undergo devotional discipline in order to achieve the desired result. But we should have confidence, be very, confident that the result will be there. It's just, you have to, follow those guidelines given by Rupa Goswami, enthusiasm, determination, perseverance like that, and then patience, and then in due course of time, when Krishna is ready, when Krishna feels is the right time, and he knows better than anybody else, of course, what that is, then it'll be awarded to us like that. So, do anybody have any questions? Oh, should have, yeah. Thank you.
Sura was originally scheduled to give class, and Bhrigu had to jump in at the last moment because Sura had a last-moment appointment. Thank you again. Nice class. I just wanted to touch on that last point you made about the books, that Prophet wanted them to give money because then they would value it. That's not the only reason. The other reason is that we have to pay for those books. We don't get them free, and I know I'm the one who buys the printing. So the BBT has to pay the printers. When the temples buy from the BBT, they have to pay the BBT. Otherwise, we can't pay the printers. And when the distributors go out, they should get enough to at least cover the temple costs. Otherwise, the temples will fall behind in paying the BBT. You see? Now, when Prabhupada was present, and because he had so many projects, you know more than I do, because you were out there a lot more than I was, that we had to try to get a lot more than the book was worth, because we had to send money to India, and Prabhupada had so many plans. But nowadays, at least, the distributors should try to cover the cost. Otherwise, we experience at the BBT that some temples do fall behind. They start owing hundreds, then thousands, then tens of thousands, sometimes of dollars to the BBT. And we can't allow that to go on, because then we can't function. So it's not just about letting the person who buy the book, you know, value it because they gave some money for it. We're not one of those rich societies that can, you know, print billions of Bibles and give them away. We don't have that kind of resource. Right. We have to pay the printers. Whenever I order a book from a printer, the general system is we have to put 50% down right away. And then we pay the other 50% when the book is delivered to us. So when we sell to the temples, you know, for established temples, we may allow them to have some leeway that they don't have to pay immediately. But eventually, they have to pay the BBT, otherwise we can't function. So similarly, when the distributors go out, they should always have it in the back of their minds that praying to Krishna, that please let this person give, you know, a nice donation. We're not out there to just give books away.
All right, don't try to stick Svavas with the bill. Right? Yeah, so our reasons are practical, not just philosophical. Yeah, Amal Bhakta Prabhu.
Just to add to what Achyuta Prabhu said, by the way, it was a very wonderful class
you've
given so far. I wanted to make sure that I didn't forget that. Another point is that when you encourage someone to give a donation and they give the donation, that's a charitable offering. And it's not just ordinary charity. It's a very high level of charity because basically... they're giving money for number one, for our organization, which is to spread God consciousness all around the world, which is the only thing that can save the world. So that is a high level of charity. It's the only real welfare work. Mm. And second of all, the very fact that they are giving something of their own wherewithal, their funds, their money, which they normally might use for sense gratification, but it's a sacrifice. So consequently, being a sacrifice, they get some benefit in that respect as well.
Yeah.
So therefore, our aim is not only, of course, to get them to offer a donation so that we can pay the price of the printer, which we do have to do, and also to not... and to discourage them from thinking that it's something cheap and can be just handled with or looked at with casualness or indifference. But our idea is to give them the highest possible benefit, spiritual benefit, so that they will then ultimately feel an inclination as a result of that giving to in some way want to engage, as you were saying in the class, engage in devotional service. It may be in the most smallest manner, or it may be in a large manner, but the whole point is that they've gained a benefit which works on them and causes them to want to do something in the nature of serving God. And they don't even understand where it's coming from or how come it's coming, but there's an inclination, and that inclination is a force. It pushes you, and consequently it comes from that kind of thing, giving to the devotee who receives the donation and then puts it into the temple, buys more books, etc.
It's agyata sukriti, right? If I'm remembering correctly, the last class you gave, that was your purport. Was it you? Yeah, the last class you gave wasn't agyata sukriti?
Agyata sukriti is more indirect type of thing. This is direct. They actually, as soon as they give the money, they are getting the benefit.
Okay,
and
even
the
better than
agyata sukriti is, for example, as you're mentioning, is that person eats an apple, is a devotee eats an apple, and he's nourished, and he's strengthened, and vitalized, and he goes out and does devotional service and gets a benefit, then the apple, the tree that gave the apple, gets an indirect benefit. That's the agyata sukriti principle. But here it's a very direct, because he's giving the money, and he's getting the benefit immediately.
Okay.
Whether it manifests or not, immediately. But it's there already. It's a merit.
I think I've heard that, you know, donations for books referred to as a gyata sukriti, but you're right. It's definitely more direct than eating an apple off a tree. I mean, that person's getting, it's much more direct connection there. Anybody else? Anything else? Okay, Balaram, and then we'll finish. No Bhagavatam class is complete without...
You did mention that there are people who don't really want to engage in devotional service. So I have a personal experience in my dealership that this guy, actually, he's from Brazil. And as a young kid, he was abused by his parents. And then he tried again. He went into a relationship and he got divorced. And then he moved to America. So this guy actually doesn't have any experience of love. So, and I'm talking about love of God, right? So some of my salesmen actually took Bhagavad Gita because I was telling them about love of God. But this guy actually wants to merge into the light because he knows that in that light there's peacefulness. So this is the guy that actually doesn't want to, you know, and I could understand where he's coming from. He doesn't feel any love of God, okay. Love.
Let's hear the good part.
The good point is how to engage them in devotional service. But I know he likes cookies. So we have Maha cookies. And when I buy the cookies and he smells it and he said, "Hey, Ramon, you got cookies." And I don't even try to feed it to him. He just grabs it. So it's devotional service. It's Maha cookies. That's engaging them in devotional service without knowing them.
Yeah, thank you. Good point. Krishna's mercy. Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.